From the New York City area, welcome to the Badass Counseling Show, where the master badass himself, Sven Erlandsson, takes you deep and gives balm for the soul, baby.
Yes, yes, yes. We are here balming your soul, right? Tanning your arse and balming your soul. My name is Sven Erlandsson. I'm the host of the Badass Counseling Show. This is a show that goes out around the world where I am answering your questions on our lightning rounds. And on Thursdays, we have counseling episodes where I'm actually going in deep with one or two individuals each week. We've got a great episode coming up this Thursday. Please tune in for that. I'm joined in studio by KC right over there in the booth. She's the silent partner more often than not. And Rocket Rob right next to me. Rob, what say ye?
Spring and a young man's fancy turns to, I have no idea because I'm old, and you were born about 30 years too late to help me with your book when I needed it.
Oh, yeah. No, I was born in 67, grew up in the 70s, which here's the oblique 70s reference before we get to work.
Okay.
Oblique 70s reference. What show was this, and what was the name of the waitress in the show? The reference from the show is, hey, hey, hey.
Sorry, I thought you were going to say Mel Kiss My Grits.
But no, no, that's Flo. That's Mel's Diner. No, this is, hey, 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 that's Rerun. The show was What's Happening, I believe. Ah. And the waitress's name, I have forgotten.
You got me.
She was a salty one. If anybody knows the name of that waitress, no, that wasn't Good Times. It was What's Happening. But what was the name of the waitress on What's Happening? Anybody remember that? All right. It Flo. Yeah, I was wondering, Chantel. Flo, I was wondering about that. But anywho, how? Shirley. No, it's Shirley. It's Shirley. Cheryl. Thank you.
Shirley it was.
All right. That's great, you guys. All right. Here we go. Let's get started. Let's get to work. What are your questions? I'm here to answer questions on life's career, relationships, love, family, etc. Let's do some healing work, folks. All right. This is Danielle asking this question on Facebook. I've gone no contact after setting clear boundaries. I have anxious attachment style and really need help letting go. What are some things I can do to get back to normal? All right. Gone no contact. You're setting clear boundaries. Anxious attachment style and really need help letting go. Letting go. We'll just start this one off right away. Anytime you're trying to let go of anything, hold on tighter. And I know you're thinking, what the hell does that even mean? We get told, when I was going through my first divorce, people were telling me, Sven, you got to get over it. You got to just let that shit go. You got to let her go. You got to let her go. And I'm like, yeah, but how? What does that even mean, just let go? Oh, I'm done now. You just wake up one day and say, okay, I'm done. I'm moving on. No, it doesn't work. Didn't work for me. And what I've discovered, of course, in retrospect, is if you try to do that, and some people do that, but what they find is you can't just shut down all those feelings, all those memories that have emotional charges attached to them. And because what they'll discover 10 years, 5 years, 10 years, 25 years later is all those feelings will come out and they will bite you hard in the ass. So what you have to do is you have to go into those memories and go into that pain. That's what it means to hold on, to go into them and to begin to welcome, to begin to allow those feelings to come up from within and then put in them in writing, talking about them with your therapist. But I'm a bigger fan of self-help work just because you can go so much faster, or augmenting your therapy with your therapist with the self-help work. Of journaling, of letter writing, of the different methods I talk about in the book, such as the accepting technique and the Sedona method and so forth. These are other tools for accelerating the letting go of that feelings, of those feelings. But you cannot move past something. You cannot let go of something until you welcome all of the feelings that are attached to it. Otherwise, you're just stuffing those feelings down. And you may think, oh, I've gotten rid of the feelings. No, you haven't. They're in you. And you're spending as much energy keeping them down as you would going through, letting them out and letting them leave. And then you begin to really fucking calm down and you become lighter, you become freer, you become stronger, you become happier. Next question. X left me and kids for mistress. Kids don't want to be around her. How do I support the kids with this? Well, unfortunately, in that situation, so you've got an ex and who has a mistress and the kids don't want to be around the mistress. But unfortunately, when the kids are on the ex's time, the ex, as long as it's within the boundaries of the law, can do whatever the hell they want to do with your kids. If your kids are minors, that parent, unfortunately, sometimes We can't always control what happens with our kids when they are minors, when they are with the other parent, as long as it's within the confines of the law. Okay? So what can happen, so to some degree, your options are limited because you can't control that. What you can do, however, is you can encourage your ex to listen to the children. You can encourage the children to stand up for themselves. Unfortunately, the person with the power in this situation, in the short term, is your ex. He has the power of God, basically, that he can say, I don't care, kids, this is what you're doing. You're going to spend time with my girlfriend, and that's all there is to it. And you really don't have a say. You can't keep, because you will be violating the law if you stop your minor children from being with their father, if you don't have legal reason for doing so. Okay, so you can encourage the children to stand up for themselves, and they have every right to speak their truth, but know also that he has the power. Therefore, in all likelihood, the way it sounds, he's going to shut them down, right? And that's going to hurt them. But, you know, if they still want to speak their truth, they can speak their truth. But in the end, he has the power to do as he wants. If you have any sort of a relationship where you can speak with him, that would be optimal. This is an adult problem. This is a thing that adults should be talking about, and you should be going to him. But I'm betting he's not listening, and he's not understanding or not even caring. So this is unfortunately one in the short term that you may lose, and your children may lose. What daddy doesn't realize, however, your ex doesn't realize, is in the long term, it's going to bite him in the ass. And it's going to bite his girlfriend in the ass too if she stays in the picture. Why? Because it's going to bury your kid's resentment, or it may be even on the surface. Your kids are going to resent her, and they're going to resent him. Why? Because he's not listening. Now, that doesn't mean kids always get what they want. But if he's not even listening to their wants, let alone following through and not expecting them to be with her, it'll bite him in the ass later. Why? Because they'll resent him. They'll be angry with them. As much as they love them, they'll be pissed off. And that'll come out later. Give it to the teen years. Give it to the 20s or 30s. But now, here's the check I'm going to offer to you. And the check I'm going to offer you, if you were my client, and this is badass counseling, so I have to ask the hard questions. The thing you have to ask yourself, mama, and that is the person asking the question, and with all respect, and you can tell me to go fuck myself, I won't be offended, but are you doing anything to encourage their not liking the mistress? And the mere fact that you use the word mistress implies potentially a bit of anger towards her, which I have no doubt is justified. But are you doing anything? Are you infusing any messages into the kids? Are you subverting her in the eyes of your own children? Okay. And the truth is, you can do whatever you want. You're a grown-ass adult. You can do it. If you want to subvert her, you can. If you want to subvert his relationship with her, you can. Nobody can stop you, right? However, if you are doing that at all, you are fundamentally manipulating your children because of your anger, because of your hurt. That's not okay. You can still do it. No one's going to know, right? Your children may know later, or someone else may know by observing. But if you're doing that, you're fundamentally manipulating your own children because of your own pain. That's not okay, okay? But I'm going to assume you're not doing that. Therefore, I would recommend speaking to your spouse and ex-spouse and telling the scoop and say, hey, don't be doing this shit. Encourage the kids to stand up for themselves, but also be there to console them when he gives them the old buzzsaw and tells them, nope, you're not getting your way, because they're going to be heartbroken. They're going to be angry. So what you can be doing is facilitating the release of their feelings, encouraging them to let it out, their anger and their sadness and so forth. If they're, you know, early teen years, have them start journaling, right? As another way for getting their feelings out. And explaining, helping them understand that we don't always get what we want, especially when we are still a minor. And it's unfortunate. And your hands are to some degree tied, assuming you have spoken to the ex. I think I've covered all the aspects of that one. That was an intricate one. But anytime you got children involved, especially co-parenting with a selfish ex or something like that, that's a tough one. And a lot of y'all are dealing with it. I had to deal with that 20 years ago. It's a bitch. It's a fucking bitch. And the long-term ramifications, if you don't stand up for yourself, you may lose that relationship with your kids for a long time. You have every right to stand up for yourself. And that doesn't apply to your situation here. You're talking about a mistress, but you have every right to stand up for yourself. And I encourage people to do that, because I didn't, and it cost me dearly. It cost my children dearly. All right, next question. Whew, that was a whopper. Here we go. Carl asked the question on Facebook, how do I give my wife space when she still tries to contact me after she threatens a restraining order when I text or call her too much. I have the kids and she moved out. We've been together for 24 years and married for 17. So you're still married, right? How do I give my wife space when she still tries to contact me after she threatens a restraining order when I text? Rob, this is like that last question. Carl, I'm not laughing at you. This is a very nuanced question. This is sometimes why I like TikTok, because the questions, they got to put it in one sentence. But I'm going to give it the old college try, Carl. How do I give my wife space when she still tries to contact me after she threatens a restraining order when I text or call her too much? I have the kids and she moved out. We've been married. So she's moved out. You guys are separated. You have the kids. Oh, she's a fucking piece of work, ain't she? How do I give her space when she tries to contact
me? Maybe he's asking, is it okay to not respond when she texts him?
Your voice sounds funny there, Rob.
I'm a funny guy.
Yeah, it sounded higher pitched. I didn't know who was talking.
I wasn't sure either.
Okay. Carl, yeah, no, Rob's got a good point. You got to, dude, boundaries. It's just like she needs to be clear. And because it sounds like she's jerking you around. She wants you contacting her. She's contacting you, but then she's threatening a restraining order and so forth. But you're in charge of the kids. Dude, do what you got to do for your sanity. All right. If you're still feeling love and longing for her, you need to be working on getting those feelings out of you, because that's what's causing you to still want her. And you're asking, how do I give my wife space? If you're not able to give her space and you still want her, you need to, rather than flushing out your feelings towards her and expressing all your feelings towards her, those need to be coming out some other way, such as your journaling, such as your letter writing, such as with your therapist, talking with your best friend, flushing your feelings out with them so that you're not using those to pursue her. Clearly, she wants separation and distance from you in the form of a restraining order, okay? But you got to get your feelings out. And then I would actually honestly start telling her to stop jerking you around. You know, she's coming into your life. She's out of your life. That's bullshit, man. Because you got to have your wits and your sanity about you if you're going to raise your kids, and you're going to be calm and you're going to be level-headed and so forth in the raising your kids. All right, next question. Please, capital letters, answer, exclamation point. This is a command. There is. But it's a nice command because there's a please with capital letters. How do I stop sabotaging? I'm going to assume you mean self-sabotaging. How do you stop sabotaging someone else? Then you clearly have a lot of hatred and anger towards somebody else. That's why you'd be sabotaging them. So get your hatred and anger out. But I'm going to assume you mean, how do I stop self-sabotaging? Well, you begin to work on the anger, hatred and anger that you have been taught to have for your own self. All right. As I mentioned on a previous show, very often when people are self-sabotaging, it's because when they were children, when they were growing up, it wasn't safe to have success. It wasn't safe to have an opinion. It wasn't safe to be happy, perhaps. Any of those, all of those. And so what do? You fly below the radar and you subvert your own success. You deliberately fall short. You deliberately screw up. Why? Because if I have too much success, or if I get too happy, somebody's going to hurt me. Somebody's going to undermine or question me. Or, you know, you bring home a report card of all A's and then except one. And then your father says, well, why'd you get the C? You're all happy about your A's, and your father finds a way to undermine it. Or your mother is jealous of you because she thinks your father thinks you're pretty, but she's not. And so your mother harms you. Whatever it might be, we self-sabotage because we're fearful of that success, which for a lot of people is hard to understand. But we self-sabotage so we don't have the success or don't have the happiness. Well, how do you start doing that? By going back into those memories. And that's what my book is for. There's a hole in my love cup. By going back into those memories and beginning to welcome them up and the feelings that go with them. Why? Because that's the stuff you are still caught up in, the conditioning of your childhood, that you don't matter, that you're not good enough, that you're a piece of shit, that I'm going to hurt you is fundamentally the message. It was never safe for you to express your real self, to go after, to be authentic, to achieve, to accomplish. It wasn't safe. And so you were undermined all the time. And so you hid your real self. Your real self desires to express, desires to achieve, desires to aspire, and you'll never stop self-sabotaging until you get into the conditioning and the messaging that taught you that it's not safe to be you. Next question. Here we go. Are you able to work things out with an avoidant attachment person and you're an anxious attachment person? Are you able? And in other words, can it happen in a relationship where those things exist? Yes. Yes, it can. It's a bit of a minefield, but yes, it can. Why? The other person is avoid. By definition, an avoidant attachment person, they're avoiding interaction. They're avoiding conflict. They're avoiding hard questions. And if you're an anxious attachment, what? You're always in this state of anxiety, of fear, right? And so what this requires is really, to be very honest with you, it's a heightened version of what happens in every relationship. And it's fundamentally what? It's fucking hard to talk about the hard stuff. It's hard to talk about the hard stuff. And I'm sorry, that ain't unique to, it can be heightened by the different types of attachment styles, but it's not unique to those situations. And in all situations, if I have a client who's in a situation such as this or any situation, relationship situation, friendship, lover, boss, coworker, parent, child, whatever it might be, all you can fundamentally do is put your truth out there. That's all you can do. And if you can do it calmly and clearly, yet boldly, firmly, you know, there are times when you got to be a little more gentle, times when you still got to be bold, firm, whatever it is, but it's putting your truth out there. And keep putting your truth out there. That's all we can do. And we can listen to the other person's truth. And without my own emotions, my pregnant emotions come vomiting out on them. Well, how do I keep my pregnancy of emotions, this flush, I'm swollen with my own emotions. How do I keep that from spilling out on someone else? And you know what I'm going to say, people? Journal the fuck out of that shit, right? Because it's always our swollen emotions that cause us to do the worst shit. I don't know about you. Actually, I do know about you because I know human nature. When I am pissed off, when I am hurt, when I am sad, that's always when I make either the bad decisions or just the decisions I end up having to apologize for later. Rob, let me ask you this question.
Yes, sir.
Let me ask you this question. Do you find, generally speaking, that you make decisions you later regret or whatever when you are in a calm state or when you are in some sort of amped up state or frustrated or anxiety ridden state?
That it's fairly obvious that if you're all amped up, you're not going to make a good decision.
Right.
And the problem I have in the other direction is when you display this behavior, that's all anyone ever remembers about you. And it's a horrible situation to be in.
When you display the behavior of forever acting out of high emotion?
Yeah, but yeah. Really exploding, let's say.
Have you been that way in your life, Rob? I can't imagine that. I mean, I know you at this age, and you're generally a calm guy, except for the technical difficulties we had this morning, which was understandable, and you mastered it. It was awesome. But were you at one time a person making decisions from swollen emotions, or were you more inclined to shove all your emotions down and make it from a different place or something?
Well, the emotions could well up, but when they did, I knew not to make any decisions. I regretted letting my emotions get the better of me. Mm. It can happen. These days, it mostly happens when I'm alone.
What happens when you're alone?
That I get overcome with emotion and I would express it.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Why do you get overcome with emotions when you're alone?
You know, it's thinking of old thoughts that really don't matter, that haven't been effectively journaled out yet.
Wow.
Yeah. So I don't generally, nobody sees it really.
Huh. Wow. So when you're alone, your mind races.
Yeah. You're your own best critic, right?
Wow. Worst critic, right?
Both best or worst.
Best or same thing, right?
Extreme,
right?
Extreme, yeah.
Gotcha. Interesting.
But
very interesting.
I'm always aware, having witnessed this in business many times.
Then just for the record, people, explodes. He was a senior vice president, executive vice president, whatever, at Paramount Studios, Spike TV, in the entertainment industry. So when he says high-level corporate shit, he's lived the highest levels of corporate shit. Go ahead, Rob, make your point.
Reasonably high. When I've seen this in others, their reputation is sometimes forever damaged. Mm. So you just can't let it get the best of you. All the more reason to get it out, doing your own work, however you do it. That's really important.
And in addition, I'll add this on top of that, if I may, and you discard this if it doesn't resonate, Rob. The people who make the mistakes, the ones that I respect the most, aren't the ones who make the mistakes, or respect, who don't make the mistakes, who don't say things. It's not people who never make the mistakes of, in a flurry of emotions, they make a bad mistake. It's not the ones who don't make the mistakes that I respect the most. It's the ones who do the wrong thing, say the wrong thing, and then come back and own it and apologize and say, I fucked up and that was wrong and there's no excuse and I'm so fucking sorry.
You know how often that happens in business?
I don't. So you tell me.
You want to put a percentage on it, my friend?
What is your percentage, Rob?
It's the number N, where N is small.
N equals small.
You're a math major. You understand where N is small.
N is very, very small. Infinitesimally small. All righty. That we took a Rob divergence, and that was a lovely one. Thank you for your question, big one.
And so keep a lid on it, for God's sake.
But in your spare time, let it out so that you're not spending your life energy keeping a lid on it.
Exactly. Right. Work it out yourself.
Exactly. All right. Here we go. Jared asks the question du jour, my favorite question today. How do you keep from passing on your characteristics of, quote, not getting your love cup filled, end quote, to your kids? How do you keep from passing on characteristics of not getting your own love cup filled to your own kid? That's a great question. By healing yourself is the short answer. Heal your own shit. Heal your own fucking childhood, and your marriage will be, any future relationships you have will be amazing. Heal your own shit. And your parenting will change radically. You will see it change before your eyes. I had a client, wonderful gentleman, father of two sons and two girls. And it was bath time at his house. And, he's getting, his girls are like, 5 and 2 or some shit. And, the two-year-old was in the rub-a-dub-dub tub, three men in a tub, bubbly bub. And the five-year-old didn't want to get in the tub. And it's like a fucking Wednesday night. It's like, you're thinking, get in the fucking tub, kid, right? And he was stressing out. The kid just was petulant, not wanting to get in. And he and I had worked together. We'd probably only had 2 sessions. And he reports to me in his 3rd session. He said, Sven, normally I was finding myself getting frustrated. And normally that's what I do. I get frustrated. But something happened inside of me, Sven, when my 5-year-old daughter doesn't want to get in the tub. My 2-year-old's in there. We got Mr. Bubbles going and all that. And I stopped. And it's weird, Sven. I stopped. I caught myself and I looked at my daughter. I just stopped what I was feeling. I stopped and I looked at my daughter and I said to her, what's going on, honey? And there was a shift in my energy. There was a shift in my questioning. What's going on, honey? And then what are you feeling? He said, Sven, I asked her that question. What are you feeling? She started to cry instantly. She started to cry. And she had been, stressed out about her day or her food wasn't hot at dinner, whatever the fuck the problem was. And he hugged her and she cried. And he told me, Sven, I couldn't think of what to say. I just said, it'll be okay, honey. It'll be okay. She cried, and you know what? After she was done crying, I just let her cry. I'm sitting there. I've already got, the floor's already wet. I'm sitting in the tub water from my 2-year-old splashing, and I'm already wet, and I just let her cry. And when she was done crying and she's sniffling, she plopped right in the tub without me even asking. All right. It changes everything. You even beginning to heal your own shit, Jared. Even beginning changes everything. You begin to become more aware. You become more aware of what's going on around you, as in the bathtub case, but also what's going on inside of you. And that's real awareness. This is the real high-powered shit. You begin to see your own feelings when you're becoming swollen with emotions, as Rob was talking about a minute ago. You begin to see how, oh shit, my feeling like a burden when I was growing up is causing me to take on so much extra work at work. Well, shit, as I'm taking on more work at work, I have less energy when I walk in the front door. And so when my kids want me to get down and have a tea party with them or play Monopoly with them, I'm like, no, I don't have time for that. So it's not just work is affecting my being short with my kids. What's driving me to take on so many responsibilities at work is the fact that I was a condition to believe that I was a burden. And so I don't want people to think I'm a burden, especially at work or in my friendships or in my marriage. So I take on more and more and it fucking drains me. See, so it's being driven by those messages from way back there. And in a roundabout way, it's affecting my kids on the floor in a tea party. So you see, folks, that conditioning, and it's not just getting out the pain and the fears and the anger and the sadness. It's not just about the feelings. The really infinitely more powerful stuff is the BS beliefs you've been taught about yourself that were never true to begin with. This is the high-powered shit. This is what I write my books for. To get down with those deep questions of what really were the messages that you were taught about yourself. Because I got news for you. You're a good kid. The bullshit messages you started getting when you were 2 or 4 or 6 or 8, they were never true to begin with. You were a sweet kid. I've told you guys before, my sister-in-law, Amy, has been a neonatal nurse in the Twin Cities. She even won Nurse of the Year in the state of Minnesota a few years back. And Amy has worked with preemie babies her entire career, like 30 fucking years or some shit, right? And, you know, she's brilliant. They love her on her job. She's amazing. You know, conjoined twins or a baby born with a heart outside the body or, you know, 17 fingers and 2 toes or whatever. And I once asked Amy, how many children are born bad? She looked at me and she said, you're a fucking idiot. What does that even mean? None, dummy. No children are born bad. It doesn't even make sense. No children are born bad. That means your belief that you're a burden, that you're no good, that you're unlovable, that you're unloved, that you're unwantable, that you're unwanted, that you don't matter, that you're not important, that you're not worthy of love, all of those messages you weren't born with. They were not your native state. No child comes out of the vagina thinking, hey, I suck. That's conditioning. You are conditioned to believe it. That means somewhere between the womb and right now, you're taught a grand lie. You were taught to hate yourself. You were taught to think you're unlovable and so on and so forth. That was not your native state. That means the very beliefs that you are potentially infusing or are infecting or are lacing your parenting, your work style, your career, how you are in your relationship, are driven by the bullshit messages you were taught that were never true to begin with. You were a sweet, wonderful, beautiful, rambunctious, playful, snotty, happy kid. You were, just like every other kid. But you were taught to believe otherwise, and all of the problems in your life, all of the problems in your life are directly or indirectly a result of those beliefs that you were conditioned to believe about yourself. And all of your parenting decisions are either a direct result or somehow infused by that shit. So how do you do it? Honestly, you can go into therapy, but a lot of therapists don't look for this shit. They don't go down to core beliefs. I'm not a psychologist. You guys know that. I'm a soul counselor. I go deeper. I go down to the core, rock bottom core beliefs. And that's what the book's for. There's a hole in my love cup. It'll take you down there. It will kick your fucking ass. It will challenge the shit out of you. And it'll fucking help you heal, man. It will fucking heal. All right. Much more to come right after this short break.
So I was telling a buddy of mine how he seems happier. He told me about the book that changed his life. So I bit. I went to the Badass Counseling website and downloaded There's a Hole in My Love Cup audiobook. I started listening to it on my commute home from work, and holy cow, it was a Louisville slugger to the face. I literally sat in my car in the driveway night after night, listening through to the end of a chapter or doing the journaling exercises. My wife started to see changes. I started to change a lot. My default response stopped always being anger. Now, I manage a team of salespeople, and I changed as a leader. I was listening more, not always just reacting. When their numbers started going up seemingly out of nowhere, I knew what the reason was. There's a Hole in My Love Cup is now required listening for any person on my sales team or working for me, and I gladly buy it for them. You gotta listen to this book.
This show provides soul counseling intended to entertain and inform and is not medical advice. Now, back to the badass.
Hi guys, we're back. I've got a question right here. All right, I have a question from Lori. Lori, you are really wanting me to get this message. Copy and paste it a few times. It looks like either that or my feed on Facebook is flipping me around. All right, I have BPD and I can't feel. What's a legit gut feeling versus what's the BPD? You know, it's really interesting because I get a parallel, a similar question that I get from people who don't have that. Is, Sven, how do I know if my gut feeling is my actual gut feeling or it's shit from my past or my own other stuff? How do you know when it's authentically you is really the question. If it brings calm or excitement, it's you. and good excitement, you know, enthusiasm, exuberance. If it brings calm or exuberance, it's you. If it brings anxiety, if it brings fear, if it brings more anxiety, if it brings sadness, if it brings a feeling, energy of heaviness, it's not you. It's not you. And I get people saying to me, well, Sven, doing the work of therapy brings heaviness. Yeah, but how does the long-term vision of being healed, what does that feel like? It feels exciting. It feels calm. It's like, it feels like I know what I want. So even then, the heavy feelings that precede it, when you let all those feelings, all those memories out, yes, it's heavy, but the long-term vision of healing and then the lightness that comes from it is what I'm really seeking. So you're asking, how do you know if it's authentically you or not you? What is the feeling that it produces? What is the feeling that it comes from? Does it come from a place of knowing? And does it create a sense of calm in you? Does it create a sense of exuberance of what's ahead? Then it's you. And if the other feelings that are coming up, that's shit that needs to be healed. That's pain that needs to be healed. All right, next question. All right. Here we go. This is a good one. Any advice for someone who is trying to stay hopeful? And just in case I stuttered, mumbled, or slurred, any advice for someone who is trying to stay hopeful? Yes. Yes. My advice is, what the fuck is causing you to not be hopeful? Right? We have hope in situations where there's a whole lot of reasons to not have hope. That's what hope is. Hope is when stuff is shitty or stuff is hard, and we hope. Hope is like the beacon of light that calls us forward, right? But we only need a beacon of light calling us forward when stuff is kind of dark or hard, right? So the way we stay more hopeful is by getting into our feelings and purging our feelings of darkness, of hardness, of difficulty, of sadness, of anger, of all these things, right? That's what's making your hopefulness so hard, is you're feeling burdened by all the other shit. So go into all the other shit. The very stuff you're trying to get out of by being hopeful, the anger, the sadness, the hurt, the pain, go into it. Flush it out. Welcome it. Flush it out. And then guess what? The more and more you do that, the lighter you become. The more energy you have, and it becomes far less difficult to be hopeful. It becomes much easier to be hopeful. Why? Because you don't have as much stuff dragging you down. It's that way in any case. Anytime you can't get motivated, it's because you got shit dragging you down inside. Either that or the path you want to pursue isn't authentically your path. It's what you think you should do. All right? But if you're not able to sustain motivation or hopefulness or enthusiasm, it's because you got shit inside you dragging you down. And the way to get that enthusiasm and hope back is get the shit out. All right. Crystal Shaw says, you look radiant today. So rosy-cheeked. Hey, I'll take that. Smoke them if you got them. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. All right. Nice things are nice. All right.
Maybe it's because you're next to me. And
well, comparison. I was going to say, I'm sure she meant it for you.
No, I think it's because compared to me, you seem rosy-cheeked.
Aha. Oh, Rob, you're not grim or dour.
Those are feeling words.
They are feeling words. That we just don't use enough.
I think so. Grim, grim, dour, dour. I got a good one here, by the way.
All right. Lay it on me, Mukau.
All right, senor. I'm 61, having mental problems due to mother's undiagnosed mental problems. After hearing your podcast, I realized I had to cut off toxic relationships. Mother and sister, both extreme takers. How do I not feel guilty? Because it's my mother.
So wait, say that, just read it one more time briefly, quickly.
Okay. 61, mental problems due to mother's undiagnosed mental problems. I realize I have to cut off toxic relationships. My mother and sister, extreme takers. How do I not feel guilty?
Okay.
Because it's my mother.
Well, no, and that's totally understandable. It's literally what I was just talking about 2 seconds ago when I was talking about negative feelings inside. The things that keep us from being hopeful are the things bogging us down inside. If you're having problems being hopeful, for instance, or being excited or getting motivated or having enthusiasm, it's because there are other feelings bogging you down. So in your case, you're having trouble executing the sort of boundaries with mom and sister because you have the negative feelings of guilt inside. So what do? You bring up the guilt. You welcome the guilt. And if you and I were in session right now, I'd say, what are you feeling most guilty about? Oh, that this is my mom and I should this, or I have to that, or whatever. And I'd say, and where do those feelings come from? This notion, well, you know, it's your mom. You're supposed to. I said, why are you supposed to? The mere fact that you want a disconnection or a boundary with a parent is an indicator in all likelihood that they have breached the contract already, that your mother has been extreme taking, that she's using you to get her own needs met. Well, you have every right, regardless of whether it's a mother or sister or a brother or friend or whatever, you have every right to expect reciprocity in a relationship. That doesn't mean everything I do, it's one for one all the time. It means that this other person is making just as many deposits into our relationship account as you are. But you've got someone who's just taking, 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 and you feel guilty when you allow yourself, honestly, stack up, write down every single fucking thing that your mother has done to hurt you, to take from you, to use you, to abuse you. Fucking write it down. Put it on a piece of paper. Every last fucking thing. And that's what I do when I'm in counseling with someone. They have to write autobiographies. And I just use that as evidence. And I say, well, wait a minute. You said this and this. Yeah, but it's my mom. Yeah, but you said this, 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 and this over here. I'll be really honest with you. As an outsider, your mom looks like a real jerk. She's using you. Now, you can keep doing it, but no, it's wrong. And you have to be able to do that for yourself. You have to be able to look at, in order to no longer feel guilty, bring up your feelings of guilt, journal them out, flush them out, but also look at all the things that justify your wanting and, in fact, needing the boundary. Write down all of the extreme taking so that you see it right there in front of you. But yeah, at some point, your pain has got to be bad enough. It has to have gotten bad enough that you stand up and you hold your boundaries and you don't feel guilty, because the bottom line is you have every right to have happiness. You have every right to expect relationships, even family relationships, especially family relationships, where the other person is giving just as much as you are. All right, next question. Here we go. Sven. It's actually Sven, but I had older brothers. Trust me, I've been called everything. Sven, you believe we parents ever learned to our children in the past? They did not know, I guess. Yeah, I think we learn as parents, and we do our best to parent better and keep parenting better. And hopefully we're owning our shit. And I just actually, you know what? I got to pause right now. I want to make a note for everyone. You guys have heard me tell the story, so I'm not going to go into the whole story. But basically, when all of us kids in my family, I'm the youngest of six kids, five boys, one girl, but my sister was basically a brother. She's a tough one. And identified largely as a brother because she'd kick our ass. Anyway, but when we were in our 20s, our parents invited us, mother and father individually, encouraged each one of us that if we had any issues with how that we were parented, or ways we might have hurt, they might have hurt us or let us down or whatever, to talk to each of them individually about it. I remember going on a walk with Dad. We walked down, you know, behind Redeemer, over in front of Steve Hall's place, and down around Steckman's, and then around, and, you know, by Ken Schultz, and then back, and walking with Dad and telling him stuff. I remember it. I remember having that conversation with Mom. I remember Mom in her 80s, this was about a decade ago, in her 80s, coming to each of us kids individually and telling each one of us, if there's anything that I've done that has hurt you or harmed our relationship or I've let you down, please tell me. Let's deal with it now. Let's address it so that it's not lingering into the future. And again, in her final year of life, which was just 2-3 years ago, she went to each one of her kids. And I know it because she told us. She went to each one of her kids and she said, you know, if there's anything, to use Sven's language, my language in the book, There's a Hole in My Love Cup, if there are any rocks in that burlap sack on your back that I have put there, anything that has weighed you down or is hurting you or causing you to undermine your own belief in yourself, if there's anything, please give those rocks back to me. I don't want to pass away knowing that you have unfinished business or ways that I've hurt you. Okay, folks, this is master level stuff when it comes to parenting. Parenting doesn't stop when the child is 18. Parenting doesn't stop when they move out of the house. Parenting doesn't stop when they have kids of their own and they're fully functioning. There's still one more thing, at least one more thing, but this is a biggie. It's when your child, and it can happen at 15, it can happen at 45, it can happen at 70. When your child comes to you or is struggling, but maybe is afraid to come to you, doesn't want to hurt your precious feelings, whatever it is, but it's when your child comes to you or when you go to your child and you finally request to own the pain that you've caused. That's master level parenting. because so many parents get caught up in the ego belief. I was a great parent. I didn't do anything wrong. Or if I did, it was no big deal. Or if I did, I had my reasons and these were my reasons. Or if I did anything wrong, it's because I had such a horrible childhood. There are these justifications and defenses and deflections and denials. And as a result, that child, that adult child, that 45-year-old child is still has that rock, those rocks in that burlap sack on their back from the pain that I, the parent, have caused. How about just taking the fucking rock? My daughter and my son each have said things. And I've owned it. And I've wanted to own it. Well, my daughter had a thing. And I didn't remember it. There was a certain event and I didn't remember it. And my daughter was in her 20s at the time. And she brought it to me. And she said, you know, this hurt, Pop, and whatever. And I said, you know what? I'm going to be honest on this one. I don't remember that. But you know what? I'm in my 50s and I guarantee your memory at 25 is far better than my memory is at 52 or whatever. And so if you say it, I believe it happened and it hurt you. And that's the problem. And I apologize and I own it. And it's just like, that was wrong. And that's not okay. I look at it this way. What do I lose? As a parent, what do you lose by owning pain that you've caused your child? All you lose is your precious, fragile fucking ego. Believing, no, I'm just a good parent. And whatever I did, I did my best. And fuck you, I don't care about your feelings, is basically what you're saying. What do you lose by saying, you know what, sweetheart, I'm sorry. Even if I don't remember it. Or in that case, yeah, you know what, you're right. Or I didn't intend that, but I can certainly see how that could have hurt your feelings. What do I lose? By taking that rock out of my child's burlap sack, I lose nothing, but they gain so much. I have clients of every fucking age into their 80s. I've had clients as late as their 80s, even one or two in their 90s, where they were still burdened by pain of the dead parent that the parent had caused, still wanting redemption, still wanting atonement, still wanting affection, attention, appreciation, approval, acknowledgement, apology. You have so much power. When your child is grown and gone, your power almost in strange ways increases. Your power to change the world, your power to change your child's marriage, your power to change your grandchildren increases. Give your child healing, please, for the love of God, for the future of the world. Give your child the healing. Do you know how much shit is done in this world because of unhealed people? And you, the parent of an adult child, have the power to heal it. God damn it. Give your child the healing. Suck up your fucking ego. Flush out your feelings and allow your own feelings and take that on the side and do your work with your therapist. But please take the rocks back that you have put in the bag on the back of your children that are weighing them down, because when they are 15, when they are 25, when they are 45, they just want to fly at full wingspan. They just want to live their fullest self, and you have more power than anyone on God's green earth to heal them by taking those rocks back. Folks, this has been a great episode of the Badass Counseling Show. Any thoughts in conclusion, Rob?
Yeah, I would say this to our listeners. If you happen to be the child who was on the receiving end of a parent offering this, please have the courage to be honest.
Mm.
In my experience, sometimes you don't have the courage to say those truths back to a parent, but you got to do it. Helps both of you.
Well, and you know what, Rob? I love that, because so often if a child grew up where it was all about the parent's ego or whatever, the child, even at 45, let's say, thinks, oh, I don't want to hurt my parents' feelings, or my parent is too fragile, or the parent lives, I had a client this week, parent lives in this odd bliss of I didn't do anything wrong, because they've never heard from the child what they actually did do wrong. And there are parents who are receptive to hearing that. And it's like where they have the holy shit moment of fucking hell, I guess I didn't know and I'm so sorry or whatever. A lot of parents aren't going to do that.
I would just say take the risk.
Take the risk.
Please.
But also understand, I've created tools so that you can heal even if you never confront your parent. If you don't want to confront your parent, don't. That's okay. You can still heal. And that's what my books are for and so forth. But if you want to, this is the one caveat I always tell clients. If you're ever going to confront a parent or bring it to a parent's attention, what was done or what wasn't done or what you needed or how they failed, don't go in expecting something in return. Go in. If you need to say it, you're doing it to, so that you can live with a clean heart. All right, you're doing it because you need to say it. And that alone is the only thing you're going to, you need to assume that's going to be the only thing you get out of it. If you get more than that, if they get an apology or acknowledgement, God bless you. The bonus land, we're in bonus time now, right? But you need to, if your goal is anything other than getting it off your chest, you're going to be in all likelihood disappointed. But if you need to get off your chest, you need them to hear it. If you need to speak the truths of six-year-old self and six-year-old or 14-year-old self needs to be heard once and for all, then fucking hell, do it. Fucking hell. But nonetheless, do the healing work on your own with your journals and letter writing and your therapist. Find people, my badasses, from around the world, from South Africa, from Japan, from Norway, from Copenhagen, from Pretoria, from Australia and New Zealand. I love you guys so much. I love you guys, my Italian friends, the women of Ireland. I guess the men too. Drink with you, mates. But it's just great to have you all here. On behalf of Casey over in the booth, on behalf of Rob the Rocket, I am Sven Erlandsson. This has been another exciting episode of the Badass Counseling Show. Have a kick-ass day.
The Badass Counseling Show is strictly copyrighted. No copies may be made without the express written consent of the Badass Counseling Show, LLC. The Badass Counseling Show is produced by Karen Camparelli and Robert H. Friedman. Executive producer, Sven Erlandsson. Original music by two-time Emmy Award-winning composer Trevor Morris. Have a kick-ass day.